The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are cracking open a really foundational text. It's Immanuel Kant's Groundwork for the Metaphysics of Morals, basically an ultimate rulebook for objective ethics.
It really is radical stuff. And our mission today, well, it's to unpack Kant's very rigorous answer to, let's face it, a huge question. What actually makes an action morally right?
Yeah, and what's so striking is that he wants to base it purely on reason, not, you know, messy emotions or unpredictable results.
Exactly. Pure universal reason. That's the goal.
And that's why it's still so important, isn't it? I mean, this is the philosophical DNA for so much modern thinking. Human rights, autonomy, dignity.
Absolutely. Kant basically demanded that morality should be as solid, as objective, as, say, the laws of physics. If you're wrestling with questions of justice or ethics today, you pretty much have to grapple with Kant.
Okay, so let's talk about the man himself, the architect of this rational universe, Immanuel Kant.
Right. Born 1724, died 1804, lived his whole life in Königsberg, Prussia. A real central figure of the Enlightenment.
Very systematic thinker, challenging old ways of thinking.
And what's fascinating is how his ethics fits into his larger project. He'd already written the Critique of Pure Reason, figuring out the limits of what we can actually know about the world through our senses.
Okay.
So the groundwork is him applying that same intense scrutiny, but this time to morality. What must we do? Not just what can we know.
I see. So using the same kind of logical rigor to build a system for how we should act.
Precisely. He was searching for the a priori principles of ethics, rules that exist just in our reason, you know, totally independent of experience or culture.
A bit like maths or logic, necessary and universal.
That's the idea. Morality shouldn't depend on whether you feel like it or what your society happens to think. It has to apply to any rational being, anywhere, anytime.
Which sets up his big idea.
Yeah.
The foundation of morality is pure reason, and that leads straight to what he calls the categorical imperative.
Yes, and it's important to see the groundwork as just the groundwork, the foundation. It's not meant to be a handbook for every single ethical dilemma you might face.
Right, it's about establishing the supreme principle.
Exactly, and he immediately throws out other contenders. Forget about consequences, that's utilitarianism, focused on happiness. Forget about just following divine commands. For Kant, it all boils down to the motive, the reason why you act.
The intention behind the action, that's where he lands on the goodwill, isn't it? The only thing that's good without any qualification.
That's his starting point. He says, look, things like intelligence or wealth or even courage, they're good, sure, but only conditionally. They can be used for terrible things.
Yeah, a clever criminal uses intelligence for evil.
Right. But a goodwill uses commitment to do the right thing simply because it's the right thing that has unconditional moral worth. It's good in itself.
Okay, so the goodwill is the core. How does it actually work? This brings us to duty, right? And that crucial difference he makes. Acting from duty versus merely in conformity with duty.
Yes, this is absolutely key. Let's use his famous example.
Yeah.
The shopkeeper.
The honest shopkeeper.
Right.
So he gives everyone the correct change, doesn't cheat anyone, seems moral.
Seems moral, yes. But why is he doing it? If he's being honest just because he knows a good reputation is good for business, well, he's acting in conformity with duty. He did the right thing externally.
But his motive was self-interest, inclination, not pure duty.
Exactly. So for Kant, that action, while correct, lacks true moral worth. Now, contrast that with the reluctant philanthropist.
Ah, yes, the counterintuitive one.
This is someone who maybe they're going through a tough time themselves. They feel zero natural sympathy for other people. Maybe they're just miserable.
Okay.
But they still help someone in need. Why? Mm. Not because it feels good, but because they recognize it as their moral duty. Mm. They force themselves to do it out of respect for the moral law itself.
And that's where Kant says the real moral value lies.
That's it. Because the motive is pure. It's not mixed with any feeling or potential personal gain. It's just respect for duty.
Wow. I mean, that still feels a bit cold, doesn't it? Saying the person who struggles against their feelings is more moral than someone who helps out of genuine compassion.
It does feel cold. It's one of the big criticisms. Mm. But Kant's logic is rigorous here. If you act only out of sympathy, well, sympathy is fickle. It can disappear.
Right. You might not feel sympathetic tomorrow.
Exactly. But if your action is based on recognizing your duty, that commitment comes from reason, which is stable and universal. The moral worth, for Kant, requires that purity of motive, untainted by mere inclination.
Okay, I get the logic, even if it feels harsh. So duty is the driving force. But how do we know what our duty is? How do we test our inner principle, our maxim, as he calls it?
Now we get to the engine room. The categorical imperative, or CI. First, we need to understand it's not like those everyday if-then rules.
The hypothetical imperatives.
Right. If you want to be healthy, then exercise. That's conditional on your desire for health. Moral laws, Kant says, can't be like that. They have to be categorical, applying absolutely unconditionally.
Commands, not suggestions. For everyone, always.
Precisely. And he gives us three main ways to formulate this one supreme law. They're meant to be equivalent, just looking at it from different angles. Mm. The first is the formula of universal law, F-U-L.
Okay.
The command is, act only according to that maxim, whereby you can at the same time will to it, that it should become a universal law.
This is the big test, isn't it? The universalizability test, like with the false promise example.
Exactly. Let's say your maxim is, when I'm in a tight spot, I'll make a promise I don't intend to keep to get some money. Now, try to universalize that. Imagine a world where everyone does that.
Well, the whole idea of promising would just collapse, wouldn't it? No one would trust any promise.
Precisely. The maxim, when universalized, destroys the very possibility of itself. It's self-contradictory, it's irrational, and therefore for Kant, it's immoral.
Okay, that makes sense as a consistency check. What about the second formulation? This one feels really impactful today.
It really is. This is the formula of humanity, FH. Act in such a way that you treat humanity, whether in your own person or in the person of any other, always at the same time as an end and never merely as a means.
Never merely as a means. That merely seems important.
Crucial. Look, we use people as means all the time. The cashier at the store, the bus driver. That's fine, as long as we also respect them as ends in themselves.
Meaning respecting their rationality, their own goals, their inherent worth, their dignity.
Exactly. You can't just use them like a tool, exploit them, deceive them. That violates their dignity as a rational being capable of setting their own ends. This is really the bedrock of modern human rights thinking.
It feels like a very powerful principle. And the third one, the formula of the kingdom of ends, FKE.
This one sort of brings the others together in a social vision. It asks you to act as if you are a legislator and a citizen in a hypothetical, perfect moral community, the kingdom of ends, where everyone respects everyone else as an end.
So it emphasizes that we're all in this together, creating the moral rules through our rational choices. It introduces autonomy.
Yes, it really highlights that moral laws aren't just private rules. They have to work systematically for a whole community of rational beings. And it leads directly into Kant's final section. Why are we even bound by this CI?
Right. Why should we follow it? And the answer is freedom.
It has to be. Think about it. If our actions were just determined by our desires, instincts, or external pressures, what Kant calls heteronomy, then we wouldn't really be free, would we? We'd just be puppets of our impulses.
Like animals acting on instinct.
Pretty much. But Kant believes that because we have reason, we have the capacity for autonomy. That's the ability of our will to give the law to itself. We're not just following rules. We are the authors of the moral law through our reason.
So obeying the moral law is being free. That sounds paradoxical.
It does. But Kant's big claim is that a truly free will and a will operating under the moral law, the CI, are actually the same thing. When you choose to act according to reason's universal law, you are acting with maximum freedom, freedom from your chaotic desires and inclinations. You are obeying the highest law of your own rational self.
He kind of reconciles free will and determinism by saying we exist in two standpoints, right? The world of senses where things are caused and the intelligible world where we're free rational agents.
That's his complex metaphysical solution, yeah. As moral agents, we access this realm of freedom through reason.
Okay, wow. That's a lot to digest. Let's try and boil down some key takeaways.
First big one, the supremacy of the goodwill. Remember the reluctant philanthropist. It's the why behind your action, your intention, that truly counts morally. Even if things go wrong externally, if your will was good, you've acted morally.
Yeah, that's a powerful idea. Second, the inherent dignity of humanity. This comes from the formula of humanity. Every rational person has absolute worth, is an end in themselves, and can never be treated merely as a tool or resource.
Huge implications for how we treat each other. Third, morality is universal and objective. The categorical imperative, especially the universalizability test, gives us a rational way to check our motives. Are we making exceptions for ourselves? If a rule can't apply to everyone, it's not a moral rule.
No special pleading allowed. And finally, autonomy as self-legislation. Real freedom isn't doing whatever you feel like. It's governing yourself according to the laws of reason. We are the source of moral authority.
Those are the core pillars. And Kant, despite the density, has some incredibly memorable lines that capture these ideas.
Like the very first sentence almost. It is impossible to think of anything that could be considered good without limitation except a good will. That just sets the whole stage.
Absolutely. Then the test itself. Act only according to that maxim whereby you can at the same time will that it should become a universal law. Pure rational consistency.
And the one that resonates so much today. Act so that you treat humanity always as an end and never merely as a means. The ultimate statement on respect and rights.
And linking morality to freedom. Autonomy of the will is the property of the will by which it is a law to itself. Morality comes from within our rational nature.
Okay, so how does this very abstract framework actually, you know, apply in real life? Can we use it day to day?
I think we can. On a personal level, that universalizability test is really useful. You're tempted to lie on your resume. Okay, maxim, I will lie on my resume to get a job. Universalize it. If everyone did that.
Resumes would become worthless. The system collapses. Okay, yeah, that checks out. It forces honesty.
Professionally, think about medicine. The formula of humanity is basically the philosophical justification for informed consent. You can't just do procedures on a patient. You have to respect their autonomy, explain things, get their rational agreement, because they are an end, not just a means to, say, practicing a technique.
Right, and in business.
It demands transparency, fair wages, safe conditions. You can't treat employees as disposable cogs in a machine or deceive customers just to maximize profit. That's treating them merely as means.
And thinking bigger, socially or politically.
The formula of humanity underpins modern human rights theory. The idea that every individual has inherent dignity and rights just by virtue of being human, or rather rational.
Mm.
And the kingdom of ends gives us an ideal for democracy, a community where everyone is respected as a co-legislator of the rules we live by.
It provides a pretty solid rational foundation for a lot of values we hold dear, doesn't it?
It really does.
So reflecting on all this, what was the most maybe surprising or impactful thing for you? For me, it was that idea of the reluctant philanthropist again. The notion that moral worth shines brightest when you overcome your inclinations, when you do good despite not feeling like it. That really challenges how we usually think about morality and emotion.
Yeah, it's a tough one, but thought-provoking. For me, the most lasting insight is probably the sheer power of grounding morality within us, within our rational nature. Before Kant, so much ethics looked outward to consequences, to divine commands, to cultural norms. Mm-hmm. Kant pulls it inward and says the source of value, the source of dignity, is our shared rationality. That assertion of objective value residing in us, it's a powerful counter to pure relativism and just feels incredibly significant even today.
A demanding but ultimately empowering view of human responsibility and worth.
Absolutely.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.